Good afternoon. I'll now call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:31 p.m. on Thursday, March 14th, 2024. Let the record also reflect that we have a quorum. We have Vice Chair Senator David Wilson. We have Senator Rob Keel and myself, Chair James Kaufman.
Beg pardon, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Is it Rob Keel?
I'm not.
Wow, Rob Keel. Sorry. I was looking at something else that I've got here. Senator Myers, yeah. Sorry about that. Thank you. Thank you very much. So our LIO moderator today, Dylan Williams, and Sav Danbert from Records, and of course our Transportation Committee aide, Emma Torkelson. So at this time, the typical cell phone warning. I'll check mine because that's embarrassing. And at this time, I'd like to move on to today's agenda consisting of two items. We have SB 255 by the governor and SB 218 by Senator Kawasaki. Before we get started, I want to let anyone online know that we'll be taking public testimony on the SB 218 relating to vehicle weight limits towards the end of the meeting today. Anyone we're not able to get to today, please feel free to submit written testimony to stra@akleg.gov. That's our email for the committee, stra@akleg.gov. So first up, Senate Bill 255 by the governor. This is the first hearing of SB 255. Today it's my intention to hear the bill, an introduction of it, take questions from committee members, and then hold the bill for further consideration. So with that, I'd like to invite Deputy Attorney General Corey Mills and Parker Patterson to the table. Please come up, place yourself on the record, and proceed with an introduction of the bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Kaufman and members of the committee. Very happy to be here again for the record. Deputy Attorney General Corey Mills over the Civil Division at the Department of Law. We had a last-minute switch up. The Attorney General does send his apologies. He was going to be here to introduce the bill, but came down with an illness he didn't want to share with everyone, so thought it would be better that I'm here instead. I appreciated it as well. So, but he does send his apologies and hope that I can fill his shoes today. So today we're talking about SB 255, and this is a bill that relates to the obstruction of access to public places. Just to set the stage as to kind of where this came from, what we're looking at in this bill. You know, I think every day you can read in the news about different obstructions that occur to access through individuals making intentional choices. Let's just put it that way. I can name three that have happened in the last 3 months. All three lower Manhattan bridges were blocked for a day, and it impacted tens of thousands from crossing. And that includes not just cars, but it included bikes and walkers. And as you know, Manhattan is basically an island, so it really gummed up things for quite a while and impacted people's lives significantly. There was also a man in South Carolina that blocked the entry to a healthcare facility, and so people weren't able to get in and out of a healthcare facility. And just recently, I think it was on Monday, individuals blocked an interstate in Virginia. And the governor of Virginia had this to say in the news: "It is unacceptable to block interstates, endanger the lives of Virginians, and cause mayhem on our roads." And I would say that that pretty much encapsulates where the impetus for this bill came from. So an overview just generally of SB 255. What we're really doing here is balancing two constitutional rights, and the right to freedom of movement for anyone to access public places in the state to have free access, as well as the constitutional right to peaceably and lawfully assemble. And what we want to make clear is we are not impacting people's freedom of assembly or freedom of speech. What we're doing is making sure that people aren't unlawfully obstructing access for others, while also providing those same opportunities that have been around for since our Constitution was founded to peacefully assemble. So this is really has no viewpoint discrimination. That means that it's just a time, place, and manner restriction, and that's perfectly constitutional. And we just want to make sure that Alaskans are able to move about as they see fit lawfully. So that brings us to the freedom of movement, which is really what this bill is about. So when you're looking at the right to freely move within the state, you know, you can think about, well, why does it matter so much if I, you know, can't make it in the exact time frame I want to a shop I want to go to? That's, although this bill does impact that, what we really care about is the public safety impacts. I mean, what if we had an emergency vehicle that was trying to get down the Seward Highway and there were groups that were blocking the Seward Highway, for example? What if our ports were obstructed and we couldn't get cargo off of barges? Southeast Alaska, that would be devastating. What if people decide to block our cruise ships from getting in? That's huge tourism and economy. So both public safety, public health, and just our general economy. And then you think of just the lives of everyday Alaskans when they're trying to get to work and make that paycheck, and they're blocked by someone else trying to exercise what they think is a right of free speech. But they can do that free speech in the proper place and not impact someone else's access. So that's really what we're getting at in this bill. So it provides more tools in the toolbox in order to ensure we can adequately and quickly address situations, and also that Alaskan citizens have an opportunity that if their lives are significantly impacted by some of these actions, that they can actually go after the individuals responsible for that. So those are the kind of the two major things this bill does. It adds additional criminal penalties and creates a new civil cause of action for a private citizen. And I do want to clarify, because we have gotten some questions about what does a public place mean. So that is currently already defined in Alaska law in AS 1181-900. So a public place is a place to which the public or a substantial group of persons has access and includes highways, transportation facilities, schools, places of amusement or business, parks, playgrounds, prisons, and common areas of apartments or hotels. So you can already see our law, our criminal law, already accounts for this definition, and it is fairly broad. And again, it's that freedom of movement and freedom of access.
Question. So, I have a question, sorry, through the chair. How are prisons public?
That is interesting, isn't it? It's in the definition. I don't know if we have anyone that wants to comment further on that, but that is what our law says. And I think it's access for those that may want to come and visit those in prison. It's not access to the cells, it's access to the facilities themselves.
No, thank you. I just wanted a little bit more clear definition on how so that was made publicly, and people may ask those follow-up questions on how that facility and what does that entail in that terms of access to the public and other items. So thank you.
Through the chair, I think it was an excellent question. I had the same question when I read it.
Thank you. So please proceed.
So freedom of assembly. So again, this is we're not looking to tamp down on anyone's freedom of expression. There's already laws, you know, providing for municipalities to permit, for example, different actions one might want to take. You have areas where you can do that without obstructing highways or public places. And so really, this is really about the obstruction. And just want to make it very clear that this is not about tamping down on the freedom of assembly. It's just making sure you're doing it in a proper place to balance those rights of freedom of movement and freedom of assembly. So we now have some slides for a sectional, Chair Kaufman, if that's something the committee would be interested in doing.
Yes, before that committee, any questions before we move on? Yes, please do the sectional. Thank you.
I'm going to pass it off to Parker Patterson.
Parker Patterson, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law, Civil Division. Mr. Chair, I'll do a sectional if that's the pleasure of the committee.
Please proceed.
Okay, Section 1 of this bill amends AS 02-20-050A by prohibiting general obstruction of runways on public use airports. Section 2 creates new penalties for that infraction of a Class C felony or a Class A misdemeanor, depending on the conduct. Section 3 is a conforming amendment to AS 02-20-060B based on the changes in sections 1 and 2. Section 4 establishes a civil liability for violations of any of the criminal statutes that are amended in this bill. It creates a schedule of statutory damages, which are in addition to the normal civil damages, and it also provides for attorney's fees, and it allows for injunctive relief. In addition, it creates extended liability for those who aid, abet, conspire, encourage, or otherwise contribute to unlawful obstruction in violation of one of the criminal penalties. Section 5 amends 1146.320b making it a Class C felony where criminal trespass creates in the first degree creates a substantial risk of physical injury or interferes with emergency response. Section 6 amends AS 1146.330b, which is the same thing, but it's criminal trespass in the second degree, making that a Class A misdemeanor, again, if the conduct creates substantial risk of physical injury or interference with emergency response. Section 7 is a conforming amendment to AS 1161-150A, which conforms to changes that are made in the subsequent section, which is Section 8. Section 8 makes obstructing a highway by dropping a substance on the highway a Class C felony if it creates a substantial risk of injury or interference with emergency response. Other highway obstructions are a Class A misdemeanor. Section 9 creates a new crime of obstruction of free passage in public places, which is a Class A misdemeanor if the conduct, again, creates that substantial risk of injury or interferes with an emergency response. Important to note that it is expressly permitted conduct is expressly exempted from this crime. So if you had a permit from the appropriate authority, you are not in violation of this provision. Section 10 amends the crime of obstruction of navigable waters, which is AS 3805-128F, to make it a Class A misdemeanor, again, if that conduct creates that substantial risk or interferes with emergency response. Other obstructions are Class B misdemeanors. Section 11 provides for prospective application of the criminal provisions of this bill, and Section 12 provides an effective date of July 1, 2024. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Yeah. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, the Chair. Just wondering on the amend sort of the obstruction of navigable water. The community just used to be my former district before redistricting Big Lake. They have a wonderful 4th of July boat regalia parade. Now, it's a peaceful gathering, but at times there was an incident where they're trying to do search and rescue for a fire situation. Would that be considered because the people have gathered there, it's navigable waters, but it can restrict at times, depending on when they're, and no one really can't really get a permit to do a boat parade through a municipal government. So I'm just wondering how that would apply for those folks there.
So Corey Mills again, for the record. Well, there's a couple things that you have to look at. One, is it knowingly? Are they knowingly obstructing? So you'll have to go through just like any crime, the elements of the crime. And, you know, if they do meet the elements of the crime, then the question is discretion. We have both law enforcement discretion and prosecutorial discretion that comes into account. How should that situation be dealt with? And I know we have folks from Department of Public Safety as well as folks from the Department of Transportation, I think, on the line if there are further questions. But I would say, you know, there's the letter of the law, and it does have to be knowingly and kind of meet those standards. So that would be number one question. And then the second is then how would law enforcement actually deal with the situation, which often can be talking to folks and trying to get them to see maybe the error in their ways. But I would also say the circumstance that you point out is one where we do want a law like this, because if it is a fire safety health, you know, problem, we want to give law enforcement the tools to deal with it immediately, and this gives them that.
Right. Hello?
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, I've done, you know, permitted items in the city of Palmer when I work for an agency out there for the Choose Respect March. you know, you go through all the permitting, go to the fire, police, DOT, you know, DOT access. But in areas that are not incorporated, there is that provision. I mean, there's not that provision of trying to know to go through a permitting process. And I'm just speaking for those type of concerns. I mean, yes, you knowingly know that you're going to obstruct certain pathways on the waterway. I mean, that's just a given because you have, you know, 40, 50 boats out there, or, you know, let's say you want to have a, you know, choose respect march in the air, at the airport, you know, on the runway. But there's not a permitted process to do so or to be denied. And so I'm just wondering how this will work in sort of incorporated areas where you may not have that sort of, and I know ignorance is no excuse for the law, and the laws in the books are the laws in the books, but just wondering how we would get that word out to folks that would to do that. And just because I know I understand discretion, but sometimes discretion is not equitably applied to all within the state.
Well, through the chair, Senator, I think you make some good policy points for consideration. I would also say that a lot of the things in this bill are already things you aren't supposed to do. We kind of packaged it and gave specific tools and increase in penalties to kind of deter that type of action. But again, I would encourage any member of the public who is going to knowingly engage in something like this to talk to the applicable department, whether that's the Department of Natural Resources or the Department of Transportation in those circumstances.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess in an area like, say, an unincorporated city, how would someone know that, you know, they may be blocking a road that may, because there's no permits, no when to sort of block off those roads for you and just want to have a civil, peaceful protest. I mean, I guess that's my larger question is, you know, the Delta Junction area, going out to some of the rural areas, you know, and just wondering how that would be handled in terms of complaints. And I just don't want to unknowingly hurt those, that opportunity for someone to have that opportunity if they decide to do a peaceful protest.
So through the chair, first I would go to that knowingly component. You do have to know that you're...
If you have a parade, sorry, Mr. If you have a parade or a march, you knowingly know you're going to block a road. I mean, so I think that's just the premise. If you're going to... Now, if your definition of knowingly is saying that I knowingly am going to cause a disruption so I can get more media and press attention, that's something different. But I think that's the premise of any type of demonstration, that you knowingly know someone is going to be inconvenienced.
So through the chair, we do have a definition of knowingly in AS 1181-900 again, that same list of definitions. It's the person is aware that the conduct is of that nature or that the circumstances exist or is aware of the substantial probability of its existence. So I think in your circumstance, you're saying these people pretty much do know. Again, I would probably defer to the Department of Public Safety as to how they would address that situation if they got a complaint. But again, if it fits the elements, and I'd say a lot of these elements already exist, then is it a crime? Yes. Exactly what happens after that point, I think that's where that discretion comes in and is so important in so many of our laws.
Myers. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to kind of continue with the real world examples. We had a protest, I'm wanting to say it was 2021, but I could be off on that, blocked the new bridge to the Nenana Tulchakit agriculture project. Could you comment to how this bill would have impacted that protest if it happened after the bill was passed?
So through the chair, Senator Meyer, first of all, I'm assuming that, and I believe that is already a highway. And so that was already unlawful under our laws. I think how it would have been impacted is we do have an upgrade in the penalties depending on different elements. I'm looking here, you know, Class C felony if knowingly causes or allows any substance that creates a substantial risk of physical injury to others to drop on a highway. Class A misdemeanor, knowingly renders a highway impassable or passable only with unreasonable inconvenience or hazard. And then also Class C felony under this bill, if knowingly creates a substantial risk of physical injury or interferes with emergency response, which are kind of the two elevators we put in this bill. So those would be kind of the elements that you would look at in any given situation. The underlying conduct was already unlawful under the circumstances.
Okay. Slightly different line. Another thing hasn't happened in Alaska, but we've seen it happen a few times over the last few years. I think the one that covered the news the most was in 2022 in Canada. A lot of truck protests, especially hit Ottawa. They blocked up the roads. A number of those protests, they just brought the trucks in, blocked the highway, you know, four-lane highway, put five trucks across it, you can't go nowhere, turn the engines off, take keys, walk away. That would apply as well in this case?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, yes.
Okay.
Thank you. I guess I'm trying to get a better understanding of the is this more of just a deterrent to stop activities? Because the reality, and I don't know the exact numbers from recent years, but isn't like 60% of misdemeanors get sort of thrown out and about 15% of felonies just sort of get dismissed? Is this going to be one of those cases that we're just going to cite and then just later dismiss those folks? Or is this just more of a, hey, we have a session on the books for law enforcement to say, hey, knock this off, and we just don't want you to do this. These are the penalties, so please dissemble peacefully type of situation. Is it more of a warning? Because I just, with the staffing, current staffing and resources being allotted currently, and just knowing the stats of how many cases and felonies and misdemeanors get dismissed, is it more just to give law enforcement tool to peacefully dismiss, or are we actually looking to, we're all gonna get locked up? And I understand that Department of Law, everything is by, you know, but seriously, I just want to know more of the intention of this piece of legislation.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, and it's a great question, and I would say it is the deterrence. I mean, when we had conversations about this bill before we drafted it, it was really about, we don't want to see what's going on in some other places where you have more of this happening regularly. We'd like to deter the action before it happens when you have kind of organized groups in particular that are encouraging unlawful behavior. And so it really is a deterrent effect. And by increasing those penalties, we're really showing people we are serious about this. We care about our public safety. We care about our freedom of movement. The other aspect is the civil cause of action. Because even if law enforcement, for example, doesn't rise to a level, or maybe they disperse the issue and then it doesn't go to criminal prosecution, you still have individuals that may have been impacted, and they have a right to potentially be compensated for any harm that came to them through those actions. So that would be the both our deterrent effects, trying to discourage people to impact other people's access negatively, and public safety, emergency personnel, emergency situations in particular, which is where I think having that tool of arresting individuals is really going to come in handy, because you could come in and take care of the situation right away, and you're not just citing people for financial violations, but you're actually able to remedy the situation immediately.
Thank you.
Follow up? Other questions? Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, just for a refresher for myself being the non-lawyer here, could you just real quick refresh me on the difference between a first class and a second class criminal trespass?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, I'm actually going to have to call on Casey Schroeder for that. I know she didn't want to be called up, but it's finally beyond my capacity to answer.
Fair enough.
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division at the Department of Law. Criminal trespass in the first degree is when a person enters or remains unlawfully on land with intent to commit a crime on the land or in a dwelling. Criminal trespass in the first degree under current law is a Class A misdemeanor. Criminal trespass in the second degree is when a person enters or remains unlawfully in or upon a premises or in a propelled vehicle. And under current law, criminal trespass in the second degree is a Class B misdemeanor that's punishable by up to 0 to 90 days.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. trying to wrap my head around that. It sounds like one says you're on property and the other one says you're on the premises. That sounds like the difference. And again, to my non-lawyer brain, those sound like the same things.
Through the chair, Senator Myers, criminal trespass in the second degree is the lower level offense. It is the broader, more general offense. And then criminal trespass in the first degree, it talks about a dwelling or land. And so in that case, the legislature has said these things specifically, that's more egregious conduct, and we're going to elevate that to a Class A misdemeanor.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I think I'll have to
process
a little bit and maybe follow up with the department later.
Fair enough. Any other questions? All right. So... All right, well, we do have some invited testimony. It looks like we have Daniel Pratt, Deputy Chief Fairbanks International Airport Police and Fire, and it looks like here for invited testimony. Did we want to go to Mr. Pratt? Mr. Pratt, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm here.
All right. Do you have any comments?
None so far as to the questions that were asked, sir.
Okay. So you were here for questions?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. So brief at ease. All right. Thank you. So back on the record. So are there any other questions or comments for the testifiers from the committee? All right. Well, if there's no further questions or comments, I'll just say thank you and ask, do you have any closing statements?
Chair Kaufman, we just want to thank the committee for hearing this bill. We think it's important to send a strong message that we, you know, respect people's freedom of movement as well as to keep our economy moving and our public safety personnel able to address situations. So we hope the committee considers it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And so with that, we're going to just... Let's set the bill aside and take a brief at ease while we're transitioning to the other bill. Thank you. So we're back on the record. Next, we'll take up Senate Bill 218 by Senator Kawasaki. This is the first hearing of the bill. It is my intention to hear a bill introduction, take invited and public testimony, and then hold the bill for further consideration. Here to present the bill is Senator Kawasaki and his staff, Riley Von Borstel. Please approach, place yourselves on the record, and proceed with your introductions.
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Transportation Committee. For the record, Senator Scott Kawasaki, I represent Fairbanks, Fort Wainwright, and Badger in the Senate.
Good afternoon, honorable members of the Senate Transportation Committee. For the record, my name is Riley Von Borstel, staff to Senator Scott Kawasaki.
And I really do appreciate the ability to present Senate Bill 218. Senate Bill 218, I'll just say the genesis of the bill was fairly rapidly put together. And so while we know that there might be changes, we just wanted to sort of set the bar as to why Senate Bill 218 has been presented today. Senate Bill 218 very specifically would establish a permitting process for heavy vehicles weighing more than 140,000 pounds. Alaska remains one of the only states that doesn't, I think the only state that doesn't have a maximum weight limit for a truck, and on how much general freight weight can weigh on those state and federal highways. If 218 were to pass, it would establish that permitting process within the Department of Transportation, weights and measures. I just wanted to say that when we came up with 140,000 pounds, we didn't have really any experience. When you look at a truck driving down the road, it's hard to tell how much that truck weighs. We basically looked at all 50 states through different sources. We said, well, this is the limitation in Ohio. This is the limitation in California. We sort of blended all of those, and we even used some folks, some of the weights and measures in Canada. And we put together a bill with this 140,000 pound weight. We recognize that there are currently trucks that weigh over 140,000 pounds. In fact, there are fuel trucks, gas trucks, trucks that haul just general merchandise that do weigh above that 140,000 pound limit. And so we would certainly look to the will of the committee. And with the testimony that comes from our invited testimony to sort of figure out what would make sense for this state. Again, the main reason why we've introduced this bill, it's simple. Right now, we have a very small budget, a very limited budget. We've seen specifically in the northern region how this has impacted potholes, impacted snow removal, and we haven't, in the state of Alaska, built a new major highway in decades, since before statehood. I think that we can do better, but we must have a way to pay for maintenance. And this is just one of those ways. We feel that the cost causer, that is vehicles that weigh more than just your traditional mom in a minivan, should be paying more for a permit than they are. So with that, I will pass it over to Riley for more background, and she also does have a presentation.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. As the senator said, I have prepared a presentation on SB 218 that will elaborate on the details and justification of this bill.
Please place yourself on the record.
For the record, this is Riley Von Borstel, staff to Senator Kawasaki. So to provide a brief overview of the points SB 218 hopes to address, Alaska currently has the second to worst roads in the United States. New Jersey currently sits in the number one spot in regards to poor road quality. Not only are Alaska's roads in rough shape, but they're also incredibly expensive to construct and maintain. It is scientifically and mathematically proven that heavier vehicles cause more damage to roads than their standard counterparts. In addition, the large size of these vehicles brings up safety concerns that worsen as the weight of a vehicle increases. Lastly, the environment is a concern due to the amount of fuel burned by larger diesel-burning vehicles.
Mr. Chair?
A question? Senator Myers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with regard to fuel burned to move the same amount of cargo, what burns more fuel, having fewer heavier vehicles or having more lighter vehicles?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Senator Scott Kawasaki, District P in Fairbanks. I guess it would depend on how many miles per gallon a particular vehicle takes. I'm not sure if that's I guess we would need more specifics on that particular question.
No, I'm good for now.
Please proceed.
The aim of SB 218 is not to begin a prohibition of vehicles larger than 140,000 pounds, but to establish a permitting process that would collect revenue for covering the high cost of road maintenance. Alaska's public roads are being damaged at a much higher rate by larger commercial vehicles, despite these roads serving the entire public. The aim of SB 218 is to find a way to truly share the road. So how do you gauge the quality of a road? There are several factors that the Reason Foundation took under consideration when compiling the 25th annual highway report, including the cost of maintenance per vehicle mile traveled, number of accidents and fatalities, number of hours spent in traffic, and bridge quality. Additionally, the presence of permafrost in our state, primarily in the northern region, adds another hurdle to the upkeep of Alaska's roads. As I mentioned earlier, Alaska's roads are incredibly expensive. They are the most expensive roads in the country, with a figure of $129,620 per vehicle mile traveled, or VMT. The runner-up, West Virginia, pays a mere $28,289 per VMT. This is roughly 22% of what Alaska spends per VMT. Alaska is unique in many ways, including how we acquire funding for our road system. Unlike other states that rely heavily on tolls and taxes to cover these costs, Alaska primarily relies on state and federal funding. This is a finite resource that is stretched thin as it is. Alaska also has the lowest fuel tax in the country at 8 cents per gallon. This rate has not changed in over 50 years since 1970. This is where overweight vehicle permits come in. This revenue could be used for taking care of our roads.
Senator Myers, you have a question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So you mentioned other states having upper weight limits. Do other states use a gross vehicle weight permit to fund road maintenance? And if they do they generate enough revenue to make a meaningful dent in maintenance costs?
Through the chair, Senator Scott Kawasaki. I'm going to have to look up that for each of the 50 states and the provinces that we used. I would venture to guess that there's a number of different sources of revenue for each of those different roads, different states. Of course, some of them having tolls, some of them having permits. I think it's sort of a mixed bag, but that's going to be information that's going to have to be siphoned through.
Take till the end of the day. You got a research project there. Appreciate the magnitude.
Thank you.
Any follow-up on that, Senator? All right, thank you. Let's proceed.
Once again, for the record, this is Riley von Borstel, staff to Senator Kawasaki. It has been proven that heavier vehicles damage roads at a much quicker rate than standard-sized vehicles. The equation on this slide was created following a series of tests in the 1950s, otherwise known as the American Association of State Highway Officials Road Test. During the tests, trucks with different weights and configurations were driven around a loop until the road was damaged to a certain point. This equation on the left is known as the generalized fourth power law, a rule of thumb for comparing the amount of pavement damage caused by vehicles with weights in terms of axle loads. The figure on top, W1, is the weight of an axle on vehicle 1, and W2 is the weight of an axle on vehicle 2. The equation on the right is an example of how the generalized power law works. Vehicle 2's axles would bear 1 ton each, whereas vehicle 1's would each bear 5 tons, making it so vehicle 1 causes 625 times the amount of damage inflicted on the road than vehicle 2. Robert McHattie, who's on the line, civil engineer from Fairbanks, he can elaborate more on the science behind heavy vehicles on concrete in his testimony. Without even considering the impact of vehicles in themselves, Alaska already has some of the most dangerous roads in the country due to our unpredictable weather, icy roads in remote locations, and extreme geography. Heavier vehicles are harder to control, more likely to tip, and more likely to wear out far quicker than lighter vehicles due to the stress of carrying extra weight on the vehicle itself. The United States Department of Transportation found that double trailer trucks take 22 feet longer on average to stop than twin trailer trucks, and that multi-trailer trucks have an 11% higher chance of being involved in fatal crashes than single trailer combinations.
We have a question, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with regard to the safety concerns, in some of the supporting documents that you submitted with the bill packet, stated that Washington, Idaho, and Michigan are mentioned as having done studies that show higher crash rates at, I believe it was 91,000 pounds in Washington and 97,000 pounds for Idaho and Michigan. So if it's so much higher crash rates at just 90-ish thousand pounds, why does the bill start at 140,000 pounds?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, Senator Scott Kawasaki, for the record, once again, I just, again, at the very beginning of the discussion, we sort of chose a handful of different weights and measures and sort of, I mean, quite frankly, arbitrarily took a middle line and said, this is where we want to place it. We recognize, again, that there are trucks of a heavier weight and trucks of a much, much smaller weight. We didn't really have a number to pick other than that's what we wanted. That's what we put into the bill itself. And I will say also that recognizing that these trucks are different than other trucks, I probably should say that because I've seen these trucks. The tractors that will be used in this in a particular job up in Fairbanks do have a different type of braking system, which I think needs further discussion at some point.
Let's proceed.
For the record, this is Riley Von Borstel, staff to Senator Kawasaki. Heavier vehicles also negatively impact the environment. The heavier the vehicle, the harder the engine must work, and the more fuel will be burned. The Fairbanks and North Pole areas are already non-compliant with Environmental Protection Agency air quality standards. On this slide, there's a list of all the different organizations throughout the country that are opposed to increasing vehicle weight size and limits. If you'd like to read this list, it's also in the supplemental materials.
Thank you. I have a question. So, Senator Kawasaki, with the environmental concerns, is there any way other than just inhibiting the quantity of trucks to somehow improve the air quality? I mean, I guess on one of the action of this bill, is it really relevant to air quality in that the mechanism seems indirect at best, and that it would be by inhibiting traffic at worst.
Thank you. Thank you for the question, Senator Kaufman, Mr. Chairman, Scott Kawasaki, for the record. Yeah, we actually did discuss this with the recent trucking association that came up here, because one of the byproducts of a bill that limits the weight, perhaps, of a truck would mean that there would be more trucks that travel on the road. We did take that into account, and that's why it's our fourth bullet rather than our first bullet.
All right. Thank you, Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on the slide with the national organizations in opposition to higher weights, I've got a couple of questions on that slide. First off, you mentioned OIDA, the Owner-Operator Independent Driver Association, and you mentioned the Teamsters. Have you talked to either of those organizations specifically about this bill, any letters of support, anything like that?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, Scott Kawasaki, for the record. I did speak with the Teamsters when they were in town around the same time as the Trucking Association was here. And actually, they didn't have an opinion one way or the other at that point. They didn't have an official document to state whether they cared or not. I will say that in the event in which truck weights are limited in that they would need more permits and maybe a truck company might want to have two hauls rather than three haulers, they would take more labor. And I think that an organization that represents truck drivers probably would like that. But I have not gotten a comment from them directly. And to the other organization, I don't think there's anything in the bill packet at this point from them.
Okay. Another one, you've got mentioned a number of rail organizations on the bottom of the slide there. Does the Alaska Railroad support this bill? I believe it would. There's a possibility it could end up diverting business from the trucking industry to the rail.
Through the chair, Senator Myers, we haven't reached out directly to the Alaska Railroad Corporation or the Board of Directors. I suspect that there's always competition between, say, moving objects from one point to another, whether it's air or rail or truck. And so, you know, there might be opposition simply because of that, if that's what you're asking.
Honestly, I wonder if they might support it because it would actually give them more business. But I don't know. I haven't talked to them either.
Well, just a thought to add complexity to it, the multimodal nature of transportation, it could be additive or subtractive depending upon the ultimate destination of the freight. Senator Wilson, you had a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. And this might be a question for DOT. We currently do have weight restrictions on some state roads. Just wondering what those weight restrictions are and how that would play into a part of into this bill. If this bill was enacted, would that change sort of how they manage some of the ways? I think the Glen has a weight restriction on it, and just that seasonal, and sometimes they lift it up, sometimes they don't. Just wondering how that all plays out.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I do believe the person, the director in charge of weights and measures, is actually online. That person might be able to answer that question more accurately because it deals with several different roads within, there's different roads that have different limits for different reasons. Different bridges have different standard limits as well. And they would probably be the most accurate to answer those questions. If you have a particular road in mind, that would probably also isolate the answer.
Okay. And when that time comes up, Mr. Chair, I'd be fine.
All right. We'll hold off till then. So, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll add on to Senator Wilson's question a little bit there to start with, and I've got some others. With spring seasonal weight restrictions dropping roads down to 85%, 75%, 50% axle weight, would that also end up lowering that 140,000 pound limit, overall gross limit?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, I would anticipate the Department of Transportation would see a bill like this that requires a permit of a certain weight that they would require if particular road had a spring seasonal weight restriction to take that into account like they do now. And I'm not exactly certain how they do that. That's probably more of a DOT question or a Truckers Association question.
Okay. Follow up?
Not follow up, but I've got a number of other questions to run through different lines.
Let's go ahead then.
Okay. So if these limits go into place and trucks are modified to be under the limit, DOT mentioned in the fiscal note that they've got about 6,000 trucks a year right now that are over this limit. So about how many more trucks would that put on the road statewide?
So through the chair, through the chair, Senator Myers, that might be another question for Department of Transportation, but I can say that this isn't a weight restriction. It isn't a weight limit. What it is a weight, a permit requirement for a particular truck of a certain weight. And so what we're trying to do is design a system that says these trucks, or that says this minivan that doesn't have a real impact to a road between Fairbanks and Anchorage versus this truck that has a gross ton weight or a weight that exceeds 140,000 pounds, which might do more damage, would require a permit that is higher than the permit required for a small vehicle. So what we're saying is, I don't know how a business would react to that in particular. We have reached out to some businesses, and I know there might be some today that will speak to that under public testimony or invited testimony, and I certainly expect the Truckers Association would do that.
Follow up?
Yeah, so you're referencing back to higher weights on trucks that are causing more road damage. Another one of the pieces in the supporting documents said that one federal study mentioned that Trucks that are at 97,000 pounds only pay for about half of the damage to the roads that they cause. So again, if it's 97,000 is kind of our limit here that's already only paying for half of its damage, then why is the bill starting at 140 if the goal is to recoup the cost?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, I think it's to recoup the cost with the idea that we don't want to depress the economy of the state of Alaska. We don't want to adversely impact a person's ability to get natural gas to our homes in Fairbanks or have that cost so prohibitively high that a permit would cause that to happen. We wouldn't want things like food or clothing or building materials, for instance, that shipped that are heavy, except that are pretty heavy, not to ship in the state of Alaska simply because a permit is going to pay for 100% of the road damage. And I think that that's fair all around, that every person should pay a little bit so that not one group is singled out to pay all of it.
Okay. Let's take one more and then we'll move on.
Okay. You were talking about how it could increase some business costs. Some of that could get passed on to the consumer. One question I've got as one example is how would this raise the electric rates in Tok because of fuel deliveries, either because you got to bring more trucks because you've lowered the weight limit, the amount of weight in the truck, or because you are now paying the cost of the permit. So how's that going to affect the electric rates?
Thank you for the question. Senator Myers, through the chair, one of the things that we talked in our discussions with the Department of Transportation was a way to, say, exempt certain vehicles from this permit weight or permit weight, weight permit. And so we could say, you know, that just like in the Cook Inlet, for instance, natural gas is subsidized and not taxed because it is used to heat homes. We could say that fuel in trucks that shipped, trucks that ship fuel for heat are not going to be taxed or not going to need the permit that is required of this legislation. We could also say the same for any commodity. So if it's food, if it's a particular commodity that we think is very important in a particular location on a particular road, we could exempt those. And so that particular truck that even though it exceeds the 140,000 pounds in statute would not be required, because it could be specifically exempted in this law.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. I'd like to just proceed with the rest of the bill package to be sure we get through the sectional and all that, and leave a little bit of time for our invited testimony. We have some folks stacked up, so we could. Let's knock that out. Towards the end, any other remaining questions? We'll try and use the balance of time to get to those before we finish today. So if you would, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Kaufman. Almost to the end of this presentation. And for the record, once again, this is Riley Von Borstel, staff to Senator Kawasaki. On this slide, I have the different sources that I used in finding the information. If we have any more time for questions, but if it pleases the chair, I can provide the sectional analysis.
Yes, please.
So Section 1 of SB 218 would amend AS 191065 by adding a new subsection D that sets a gross vehicle weight limit of 140,000 pounds without a permit in accordance with this section, and subsection E, which provides that the Alaska State Department of Transportation shall charge a fee for a permit to exceed said weight. Section 2 amends AS 191065, subsection A, which excludes implements of husbandry from restrictions under AS 191060 or the weight limit provided by Section 1 unless the implement is another vehicle. Under the discretion of the Department of Transportation, implements of husbandry may be operated on state highways without a permit. Section 3 amends AS 4575131, subsection A, to provide that a peace officer or employee of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, with the permission of the Commissioner of Transportation, may issue a citation to those who violate a weight, size, or load limitation adopted by DOT under AS 191060, violate the terms of an overweight vehicle permit, violates regulations under AS 191060 subsection B or C, AS 28511A2, or AS 457550 subsection B5. Violate the weight limit in AS 191060 subsection D, or lastly, commit a violation under AS 4575380. Section 4 provides an effective date of June 30th, 2024 for changes proposed in this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. And just a slight revision to what I'd said earlier. With respect to the questions for weights and measures, we do have Dan Smith and Carlos Rojas with DOT with respect to weights and measures. So if there's any specific questions for that at this time, we can go to them. Okay, none noted. Any questions about pavement? We have Steve Sabudian and Drew Pavey with respect to pavement technicalities. None noted. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Does the gentleman that you just mentioned, does he also, can he also speak to road construction in general?
It's possible. Yeah. It's maybe like a baker that only ices the cakes but doesn't bake them.
Mr. Chair, I did have a couple of questions about road maintenance costs, and so I wasn't sure if he was gonna, if he'd be able to address those or not.
Mr. Pavey works in pavement, and I can't pass that up. So, Mr. Pavey, if you could please, I see you there on Teams. If you could pop up and go on the record, and we'll hit you with some brief questions, I hope, about road construction or maintenance.
For the record, my name is Drew Pavey. I'm pavement management for the Department of Transportation.
Okay. Yep. Please proceed. So, Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pavey, so I guess one of my questions is, if this bill passed, would that raise the costs of construction or maintenance, you know, filling potholes, rebuilding a section of road because of the prices for the cost for hauling aggregate, hauling asphalt, hauling cement to more remote locations, since that's often done in trucks that would exceed this weight limit?
Through the chair, Senator Myers. That is a fairly detailed question that all that I can say is it would be possible, but understand those impacts, it would take significant analysis to understand them.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. And unless there's anything else that's super pertinent, we'll move on and start to get some of the invited testimony rolled through.
For now.
All right. So so with that, we'll now move on to public testimony unless there's anything else that needs to be said beforehand. Record. I'm sorry, I misspoke. We're at invited testimony. I was jumped a page. So we have several folks online for invited testimony. We'll start with Barbara Schumann with Advocates for Safe Alaska Highways. And so, Ms. Schumann, if you are on the line, please place yourself on the record.
Thank you very much. My name is Barbara Schumann. I live in Fairbanks, and today I actually speak only on my own behalf and not on behalf of any other persons or groups. I support Senate Bill 218, and I thank Senator Kawasaki for bringing the proposal forward to begin to address problems with heavy trucks and Alaska's lack of regulations of them. I also thank the committee for considering the bill today. The bill sets 140,000 pounds as a gross vehicle weight in Alaska. A permit would be required for anything above that amount, heavier, and that's one reason I support the bill. I really think Alaska needs to be in a position to regulate and put conditions on the use of its pavements, bridges, infrastructure, and consider safety, public safety, in this whole range of issues. Alaska is the only state in the nation without an upper limit on gross vehicle weight. The federal limit is 80,000 pounds. And I've taken a brief look at one of the charts in the Federal Highway Administration website where I often get lost. And they really do seem to hover between 80,000 and 100,000 pounds. There are several states that are above that. I think Michigan is even higher than 140,000. But I think Alaska might want to take a look at what the usual container weight limits are coming, you know, at our ports, see what those generally are, and take a look at the weight limits on roads in Canada and Washington State where freight would usually come from, I believe, or any other place where freight usually would come from, because maybe those places have limits that would not cause any disruption whatsoever if Alaska, you know, continued with those. Some states actually take a look at the commodity itself or the route and put specific weight limits, you know, for reasons other than simply just the weight. So there are a lot of... And in response to, I think it was Senator Meyer's question about DOT trucks, I know that at least one regulation of the DOT totally exempts DOT construction trucks from its own regulations. So certainly that could be done here too, so that DOT is not taxing or limiting itself in trying to reconstruct, repair, or build roads. My own thought is, and concentration is on public safety. We know that heavy trucks are very dangerous for smaller vehicles. Generally in a crash, the smaller vehicle tends to be hit at the height of its windshield, which often means that the automobile or pickup slides under the truck and is crushed or sheared off at the windshield level. There are many studies about this, and it's one reason why I have become concerned. We had a family tragedy years ago where three members of the family died in a commercial truck crash. And so these things happen, and I really think Alaska should take a long-range look at public safety, which I don't think we concentrate on enough on our public roads. I also would ask the committee to consider a long-range plan for, in particular, industrial transportation. I consider industrial transportation different than commercial transportation. It would be more like the transportation or transporting of raw materials for processing elsewhere. And generally, these loads should be able to be broken down into smaller or less heavy units. But what should the state's role be in providing industrial transportation? To me, it is totally incompatible with the use, our current uses of roads. I mean, some of the roads that we're talking about out of Fairbanks, they have school bus stops on them, over 100 between Fairbanks and Tok. That's an incompatible use. Children standing on the road, crossing the road, being dropped off and picked up by school bus. I just don't think an industrial haul should be on the same highway. And then thirdly, infrastructure. I'll leave you with one.
Can you hear me, Ms. Schumann?
Yes, I can.
All right. I was just checking. I failed to give a time limit, but we do have others. So if you can, just please try to wrap up, and we'll move to the next speaker.
I certainly will, and thank you. One last figure I would like to leave with the committee is the estimate of the Department of Transportation itself on the annual increase in maintenance that one industrial ore haul will cost the state $7,640,000 every year, and they need a one-time expenditure of over $3 million for additional equipment and yards. And so if we have not only one, but more industrial use of our highways, you can see how this is going to add up. And the state does not have the money to pay for it. Thank you very much for allowing this testimony and for your consideration. And I hope I haven't overstepped my time too much. Thank you again.
That's right. Thank you. But yes, we appreciate your input. We do need to move on. We'll now move on to Bob McCaddy. Mr. McCaddy, please place yourself on the record, state your affiliation, and please, if you would, let's try to stick to a couple of minutes, and I'll be flexible, but we do need to keep things moving.
Okay, I'm unmuted now. My name is Robert McCaddy, and I'm a civil engineer in Fairbanks, worked for 23 years as a consultant after 27 years at DOT. And I was just going to talk about two standard weight trucks that I know a lot about. There's an 80,000-pound truck that's heavy, heavy for the feds down south. That's all that's allowed on a lot of highways, 80,000-pound limit. And then there's a 164,000-pound truck that's used in the interior. So I know a little bit about those. So three things, the simple mechanics, simple physics. One thing is that as a vehicle gets bigger, according to momentum, you know, mass times speed, 160-some-odd-thousand-pound truck will hit twice as hard in an accident as an 80,000-pound vehicle. Now, hunters would call that knockdown power. It isn't calculated on energy. It's calculated on momentum. The other thing is when trucks get quite heavy, and it's somewhere above probably 80,000 pounds, they become double trucks. And a lot of times those guys want to run in the winter. And if a double truck goes out of control on an icy road, they cut a much bigger swath than a single trailer truck. And then if I have time, I'd like to talk about pavement damage and bridge damage. It might take more than one more minute. I'll get as far as I can on pavement damage. I'm a pavement design expert. Okay. Well, 80,000, I'm going to talk. Well, first of all, pavements are designed for trucks and even big trucks, but not cars and pickup trucks. So, just to cut everything to the bone, an 80,000-pound truck has about 2.5 units of standard damage. The 164,000-pound truck that's being used a lot has been assigned 5.5 units of damage by a recent study that's been done in Fairbanks. And just a quick calculation, okay, if you got, and this is a reasonable, you got a 15-year design for 3 million units of damage. That's reasonable for, say, the Alaska Highway. Okay, if you take that on a daily basis, you divide it by 365 and 15. That's 550 standard axles over the whole life. That's 550 a day. So that's the allotment. Well, if you have
Mr. McCaddy, 60, you've hit about 3 minutes. Like to just do a quick wrap up on your testimony.
Well, anyway, okay. You don't want the calculation. It's a simple calculation. But what it says is these big trucks that are running right now are using up 60% of the assigned pavement design allotment, just them. 60 trucks a day that are 5.5 damage units instead of 2.5. So they are using up 60% of the pavement design use, and they're not paying anything for doing that. The other thing is the bridges.
If you would, Mr. McCaddy, please wrap it up. We do have many folks that want to testify today. And if you have any further details, you can always send that into the committee. That's STRA at akleg.gov, and we'll distribute your comments. if you have further.
Okay, I'll wrap it up now. But this is what's caused the stip hubbub or the bridges. And on the route that's being used now for the 164,000-pound trucks, they're running illegally heavy, or they're running over the normal design load for probably a dozen bridges on that road. And that's the reason DOT is allowing that. And that's the reason for the haste in getting new bridges into the STIP.
Right. Again, got to run to the next testifier. Okay. Appreciate it. I gave you the email address if you have further. We don't want to cut you off. We just have
I'm done.
All right. So next online, we have Mr. Michelle with the Alaska Trucking Association. If you would, please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Chair Kaufman, members of the Senate Transportation Committee. My name is Joe Michelle. I'm with the Alaska Trucking Association. In the interest of brevity, I'll curtail my comments to some of the things that would be most pertinent to this committee. One of the concerns that our industry has with the bill is in Part E, Section 1 of the bill, which would essentially establish a per-mile vehicle tax on one particular user group. The attached fiscal note says it projects about 7,500 individual loads. Per-vehicle mile tax has been trialed in other parts of the country, and we have kind of data to show what they entail. When collecting a tax, the increased points of contact with the end user increase the cost of administration. The state, through its agents, would be taking on the administrative task of weighing every truck at the scales, setting out bills, collecting payments, handling delinquencies, stopping trucks if records indicate the billings are not up to date, and that's just for the honest actors that would be stopping at the scales. You can see traveling around many communities without leaving its boundaries, a truck would never see a scale. Right now, there's about 14 scales in the state. They're all on the road system, but this bill would apply to all of Alaska, every community. An example of a tax that would not have many points of contact would be the motor fuel tax. Taxes are collected at the wholesale point of contact with only a few buyers. It's already established, and it's already being collected, and it takes into account all users of the road. In addition, commercial trucks use more fuel than conventional cars and trucks, so the industry would be paying a disproportionate cost to operate their commercial vehicles. Finally, I feel this bill is asking the legislature to essentially advocate the responsibility of taxing Alaskans and Alaskan companies to unelected agents of the state. I'm not impugning the commissioner or professional road engineers or regional maintenance chiefs that might be charged with monitoring costs. The DOT isn't the Department of Revenue or the Tax Division. That department gets their marching orders from state law, so therefore the legislature. The DOT can make recommendations to the best of their abilities, factoring weather, road design, underlying road conditions, and ground conditions, but should not be the final arbitrators of administering a tax on a single group of users. DOT keeps our roads and airports operational, and so much more. Commercial motor vehicle enforcement makes sure our vehicles are operating safely on Alaskan roads. Elected officials should, through the state law, should decide on the level of extractions of monies for Alaskans and Alaskan companies. In the interest of the public comment, I yield any other time to them.
Right. Thank you, Ms. Michelle. You came in at 2 minutes. I appreciate that. Good timing. So if there's no further comments, we have quite a few folks that have called in. And so quickly.
Yes. I had a question for either Ms. Schumann or Mr. McDaniel, or excuse me, Mr. McHattie. I guess that my question would be, do either of you believe that the bill goes far enough, or does it need improvements? For example, would you change the weight limit from the 140,000 that's currently in there to 80,000 that Mr. McHattie was talking about?
This is Barbara Schumann, Senator Meyer, through the chair. I feel 140,000 pounds, this is just personal, but I feel like 140,000 pounds is kind of high. When you compare it to other states and when you compare the amount of damage. So I would favor even a lower rate. Thank you.
So,
and for McHattie, if you want to hear, 80,000 pounds is plenty for the feds on all the interstate highways and could probably do for up here, but I don't think the trucking industry would ever stand for it.
All right. Let's move on to our public testimony. And So it looks like, so let's see, I'm sorry. So a lot of people online. We're not going to be able to get to everyone today. We're going to have to run some tight time limits. I will now open public testimony on SB 218, but if you are not able to testify or you want to add to your testimony, which will be brief, please send a written testimony to stra@akleg.gov. I'll now open public testimony on SB 218. So is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? I see none. And so we'll go now to those online. And because of our tight time limit, I'll have to give just about a minute. And we'll start with Mr. John Sloan in Delta Junction. Please place yourself on the record.
Is that on? Hello, thank you, Senator Kaufman, for allowing us to speak on this bill today. My name is John Sloan. I live here in Delta Junction, and I would like to speak in favor of this bill, with the exception of Section 1E. I think that a permit by testimony today would may not cover the cost of a heavier truck to be permitted. I don't know if those permits would ever pay for the road damage and the bridge damage that would result from all these heavy trucks. And then another point I'd like to make, I'd like a fact check on the 6,000 trucks over 140,000 pounds. I think that must have been annually. I'd like to fact check that because I think that would be way high considering the weight of the containers coming into the port in Anchorage and other parts of the state. I think that's all I really have to say.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate your brevity on that, and thank you for your testimony today. All right. We'll move now to Mr. Bill Ward in Delta Junction. Mr. Ward, please place yourself on the record. And again, we've got about a minute or two because of the length of the testimony today and a hard cutoff at 3. So
please
proceed.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Bill Ward. I live here in Delta Junction. I'm speaking as a truck driver. I've been driving trucks for over 50 years in Alaska, including the use of long combination doubles. So I'm pretty familiar with this. I am in support of this legislation with the suggested amendment to eliminate Section E of the overweight permits. Just set the limit at 140,000 pounds. Primarily in my reasoning for safety and the damage to the infrastructure. Heavy trucks can be exponentially more unsafe and do more damage. Most of my comments, you have my written testimony already in your packet, so you know most of what I'm saying. But I will say that we talk about 140. We know that the ore trucks are running 165, but if you manipulate with the Alaska bridge law to going across bridges, you can simply add 4 more axles, and that truck can weigh 200,000 pounds and be perfectly legal and go over our bridges. So there has to be some common sense limit. I will make one other comment on some testimony that was earlier today for about environmental concerns of the fuel consumption on these. And I'll give you some just anecdotal evidence because I can't prove it. But my current truck gets, and most trucks on the road now pulling a standard van, will get 6 to 8 miles per gallon for diesel fuel. I talked to a local truck owner, carrier owner. They own several trucks that haul these long, heavy doubles out of Valdez, and they do weigh probably over 165. I was shocked. He says their fuel consumption is 1 mile per gallon. These engines are designed.
Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up. Okay. We're over the brief limit.
I'll just say we have to operate within the design limit of these engines for environmental purposes, too. But with that, I thank you for the time to testify and look forward to your continued support.
Thank you for your testimony today. And with that, we'll go to Patrice Lee in Fairbanks. Ms. Lee, please place yourself on the record. And again, try to stick within a minute or two max.
Patrice Lee, Hillcrest Drive, Fairbanks. Good afternoon, committee. Senate Bill 218 has come about because many people in the interior and elsewhere are concerned about significantly increased trucking, especially on the Alaska Richardson and Steese highways. We asked for this bill. We know that it's not complete, that there's some work to be done on it. We know that with plans for future mining and industry and commerce, that our roads are going to become more and more congested. So we need to have a bill that sets safe limits on highway bridge and highway load and bridge load. We need one that differentiates between commercial loads and industrial loads. And I agree with Barbara Schumann. Commerce includes moving anything that people buy, use, consume, etc. And industrial waste loads moving only for the purpose of heavy industry or extraction. The general public doesn't benefit from what's in the load. Enforce fair adherence of existing policies permitting regulations and statutes. Create new policies permitting regulations and statutes that protect the traveling public and commercial trucking. In order to answer the question that was asked earlier about air quality, in order to accommodate more truck emissions, significant reductions must be made in different emission categories. That's per the EPA regulation. Consider including wording to differentiate between hauling goods and services from loads that are, for example, 70% or more waste. Why would we allow our highways to be ruined with the state picking up the tab to haul mostly waste from point A to point B? And I'll wrap up by saying we don't want our school buses, tourists, and the motoring public to be hindered from using the roads they depend on for living in Alaska. With Build Back Better money, unfortunately, many entities, including several foreign ones, are doing everything they can to get their hands on the millions of dollars without having to pay their way in Alaska. Alaskans are not willing to pick up that tab.
Thank you, ma'am. Time check. Need to wrap up.
Okay. It's fairly common knowledge that many companies play by the rules, and they do a wonderful job. They keep accurate records, and then there are those who don't. Those who don't are putting us all at risk. Please work to make the bill the best it can be, and say what you want, not what you don't want. That will help us get to a better bill more quickly. Thank you. All
right. Thank you for your testimony today. And with that, we'll move to Lynn Kornberg in Fairbanks. Ms. Kornberg, please place yourself on the record. And again, take about a minute and a half maximum, please.
Thank you, Chairman Kaufman, and thank you to Senator Kawasaki for bringing attention to what is an unprecedented, by scale and by frequency, industrial overhaul on public roads. Our interstate, the Richardson Highway, does not have exits and entrances down on the two-lane parts of the Richardson. So when we talk about school buses, you bet the kids are standing out there. So again, the scale and frequency, when I became aware of it in 2022, the Department of Transportation, standing shoulder to shoulder with Kinross, announced to us, the public at Pioneer Park, that this overhaul was going forward. We had a lot of questions in that audience, and I think many of you listening today have a lot of questions. It's complex. It's huge global industrial industry. And I think the people that have put the time in, like Bill Ward, like Barbara Schumann, like Bob McCaddy, who came with an expertise, have tried to get their heads around this. And Senator Kawasaki became aware of it and was like, whoa, I got to get my wheels on the ground, asking the question, what's more important is not the facts. The important is the ignorance around questions that state leaders, public for their citizens, with regard to public safety. We have the FAA for airport.
Ms. Kornberg, you're at that minute and a half that I was shooting for. If you could try and wrap it up so we can get a few more folks in.
And federally, we have the NTSB, but this is unprecedented in the United States, if not globally. So please ask questions and step up with your ignorance.
Well, thank you for your testimony today. And with that, we'll move to Jasmine Jemowuk in Anchorage. If I'm pronouncing that correctly, please place yourself on the record.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jasmine Jimlock, and I serve as Water Quality and Community Health Protection Coordinator for the Alaska Community Action on Toxics. I stand in support of SB 218 and in solidarity with communities facing the Manh Choh and Kinross Orhal issue. This project is a serious threat to public health, safety, air, and water quality. It threatens the integrity and well-being of our communities. There's been no environmental impact statement nor health impact assessment for the mining plan or Orhal operation. The Arctic is warming four times as fast as the rest of the planet, and the melting permafrost weakens pavement structure, making our roads more vulnerable to damage by heavy vehicles, thus exacerbating the threat to public health and safety. The village of Dot Lake is at risk of being cut off from access to essential supplies if the truck's heavy loads cause any damage to the Johnson and Robertson bridges, threatening safety of their community and tribal members. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And next up is Lois Epstein, or Epstein, in Anchorage. Please place yourself on the record and take about a minute or a minute and a half maximum for your testimony today.
Thank you, Chairman. Good afternoon. My name is Lois Epstein, and I am a licensed engineer and consultant in Anchorage. I served on a committee for AMAS, Anchorage Transportation Planning Organization, for 6 years. I recently wrote a report as an engineering consultant on the potential impacts of ore transportation by truck near and through Haines, Alaska. I will send in my more complete testimony given the time limitations. I can see no benefits to the state not having a truck weight limitation at 140,000 pounds or less. Other gold transport operations may be in the state's future as the high price of gold makes Alaska attractive for gold mining in ways that other minerals do not, given the state's long distances and limited road infrastructure. SB 218 should remove the language allowing vehicles above the weight limit if they pay a fee to address the infrastructure damage they cause, thus ignoring the costs of adverse safety impacts and only focusing on infrastructure. This provision for a fee defeats the purposes of SB 218. Thank you, Senator Kawasaki, for sponsoring this important bill. I encourage legislators to vote yes on a weight limitation, which would benefit not just Fairbanks, but the entire state.
Thank you for your testimony today. We have time for one more, and then again, to those that I was not able to get to, please feel free to submit your testimony in writing to STRA at akleg.gov. We have a hard cutoff today, so Mr. Larry Gabriel, please place yourself on the record. You're from Fairbanks.
Hi, and my name is Gabrielle Larry, and I'm Mrs. Gabrielle Larry. Thank you. Yes, and I appreciate the bill being presented today. SB Bill 218 is very important to entire state of Alaska. And let me state that I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska, yes, and I've lived here for over 45 years. I do use the highways quite a bit, and Alaska roads are a public use. They should not be taken over by these long combination vehicles. We definitely need the restrictions, and our laws are outdated and antiquated. We need to have protections for safety and not place burdens on the taxpayers to take care of the infrastructure on these roads that is going to be obviously deteriorating at a higher rate ever imaginable. As people have testified, I am also concerned about the environmental aspects of what we know can happen and is happening. There's serious environmental impacts created. The more tires also on the road cause a toxin, and it's a waste, and it is also detrimental to our wildlife, our fisheries, and humans, and it's widely known. I had a conversation with the DNR, and people are aware of it. It's just our state has to get a handle on all this. It's great that we're having this discussion. Barbara Schumann, Bob McHatty, and those that really know the deep of what is going on here would be okay. I would really ask that you reach out to them, and I also would suggest that everyone look at what other states are doing. We don't need to reinvent the wheel here. We just need to get, we need to get behind the people, because there's way too much hazards on the roads right now. And an outside entity should not be taking our roads
over. Asking you to wrap up.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony today. Sorry for the hard time limits. I'm going to go ahead and leave public testimony open on this, and but because of the time limits today, I'm sorry, Mr. Landfield. Well, we're up against the 3 o'clock cutoff, so I'll leave the testimony open. Perhaps we can get back to you on the next time. So, quickly, just in closing, Senator Kawasaki, do you have any final comments before we convene for today?
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Senator, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. I appreciate you hearing Senate Bill 218. It's a very simple bill. Obviously, it's a very complex issue. Alaska, again, is the only state that doesn't have a maximum weight limit. This bill doesn't even go as far as establishing a maximum weight limit. It only sets in place a statutory permitting process for vehicles of a certain weight. I want to just say that this isn't an attack on truckers. We've worked closely with truckers, including one of your own. I know that truck drivers are some of the most professional folks out there, that they get ratings, they have certain skills that you and I don't have, they get permits for specific types of those ratings. I was talking just recently to the president, Curtis Spencer at Specialized Transport, that's shipping up a bunch of crates right now, and I'm getting the wave. I just want to say that I'm not afraid of a truck driver, and I'm not afraid of these trucks per se. What I'm afraid of is a service member and their wife that is in Fort Wainwright that runs in front of a truck and gets run over, and that's really what this is at least partly addressing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Going to set this bill aside for further consideration. I want to thank everyone for being here, all the testifiers. I've given the written testimony avenue repeatedly, so you've got that by now, I'm sure. And so with that, we're going to adjourn at 3:03 p.m. Thank you very much.